You're listening to For the Show We Go Baseball Podcast.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 72 of To the Show We Go. We have Ed Hand, as always, and myself, Andrew Parker. Today's guest, I got to meet him for the first time in Spring Vegas at Winter Weekend, thanks to good old Rob Bradford. But we have MLB.com Red Sox beat writer Ian Brown. Ian, I'm jumping right into it. Usually sometimes I like to like buffer a little bit, but I feel like we've had a lot of news happened this week with cuts, injuries, guys pushing for the roster. So I want to start off, you're down in Florida right now. And I guess with just all the news that has gone on the past couple days, what kind of vibes are you getting from Red Sox camp?
Just that injuries are maybe taking a toll for that first opening roster. We're still waiting to see exactly what's going to happen with Kenley Jansen. Obviously, Vaughn Grissom's going to start the year on the IL. Ref Snyder, that was kind of a blow. He's going to be out for a few weeks. Chris Martin, it looks like he'll be ready on time to start the season. But I would say just depth maybe isn't what they thought it was going to be going into the year, just because of some of these injuries, some major, Giolito, obviously major. Some major to the depth, like Chris Murphy, I think that's kind of an underrated injury for their kind of organizational depth, because inevitably you have somebody you need to call up at some point. And, you know, he's the perfect guy to come up and give you two or three inning stints. Now it looks like, you know, I think he's probably going to have Tommy John. So that's what's stuck out the last few days, is just some injuries.
I want to say, Parker, you've really undersold Ian here. Like, he's not just the beat writer for MLB.com. He's been the beat writer for MLB.com since I was in, I believe, the sixth grade.
Like 2002 was my first year.
Yeah, 2002. So sixth grade or seventh grade for me, something like that.
I was 8 years old.
Are you the longest tenured beat writer right now?
You mean as far as the Red Sox or at MLB.com?
No, not nationally, just like for the Red Sox.
Yeah, no, Sean McAdam, he started, believe it or not, in 1989.
Wow.
So,
Yeah. So he's the longest tenured, but I'm number two. I don't know if that's something to be proud of or not.
I think job security is something to be very proud
of.
Yeah,
yeah, no, yeah. No, it's been great. It's been great. A lot of nights in hotel rooms, a lot of days and nights here in Fort Myers. But no, it's been a fun ride. You know, the beat and this will be my 23rd year. Very cyclical in terms of the team, a lot of ups and downs. You know, it feels like they're at a down point right now, the last, this whole, like, I guess, post-COVID era, except for 2021. That was one of the most enjoyable seasons I ever covered, especially the playoff run when they just got so hot there. But, yeah, other than that, it's been a little bit of a downturn here. And now, you know, nobody's expecting a lot going into this year, but – you know, I kind of like the direction. At least they have a direction clearly slanted toward the young players, and seeing how this young core comes together, you know, which players step up. So I just feel like there's a little more, at least, direction, where last year it felt like they were trying to hold it together a little bit with duct tape. You know what I mean? Veterans on short-term deals, your Corey Klubers, your Justin Turners, who was great, by the way, Adam Duvall, guys like that, James Paxton, where this year it's just like, okay, young guys, let's see what you guys can do, so we know if we can build around some of you guys or not.
It's actually a really interesting observation that we've never really seen this team, I think, in the, at least within John Henry's tenure as owner, go into what would be considered a full rebuild. There's always that, well, we're going to try to contend at least, we're going to spend this amount of money this year. Everyone's talked about the budget to death, but there were really the only major signing was Lucas Giolito. The other one was like Cooper Criswell.
Yeah.
Liam
Hendricks, once spring training started, at least that's more with an eye toward next year. But yeah, it's been a strange off season. I think the way it started when Craig Breslow said at his press conference he didn't expect to be for finances to be a limiting factor, I think was his exact quote. And we all know what Tom Werner said, okay?
We don't need to say that. I saw the jersey the other day there.
And so something changed. We don't know exactly what changed, but somewhere along the line, you know, after the Yamamoto deal went south and they didn't really react by spending more money, you know, something changed. We don't know what it was, but this is where we are. This is what it's going to be. I'll be as shocked as anyone if Jordan Montgomery walks through that door someday. But I would like to see them get some starting pitcher. You know, like the depth has really suffered with, you know, losing Giolito, because now all of a sudden you're looking at, you know, you thought two out of those four guys wouldn't make the rotation, you know, Winkowski, Whitlock, Houck, and Cooper Criswell. And now it's just basically one guy's not going to make it. You don't have a lot of depth, starting pitching depth. So, you know, there's still Mike Clevenger still out there. Michael Lorenzen is still out there. You know, you'd think they would, you know, maybe sign somebody. So to me, that's been the perplexing thing, is that I think that the hitting is going to be pretty good, but why not go out and get, you know, get another starting pitcher, because it's just like this team needs another starting pitcher.
Yeah, I'd agree with your assessment there. One thing that I was wondering, though, because one of the things that they didn't have going into last season was their shortstop, and they've got Trevor Story, a healthy Trevor Story, back. And they traded for Vaughn Grissom, who looked like he was going to be the second baseman, at least on paper. And then he obviously hasn't played yet. He's going to be starting the season, it sounds like, around the first month on the IL. And Manuel Valdez is a guy who in AAA put up some good numbers, put up some decent numbers in the majors offensively, hit six home runs and I think 139 at bats, something like that. But just watching him on TV, and, you know, it's obviously not the same thing as being there for it, but also watching him there last year, the defense, especially his range, just doesn't really seem like it's of major league caliber. So I've got two questions regarding this. Sure. One, and you'll get this reference because he was here in your tenure here. Is he better or worse at defensively at second base than Todd Walker?
Oh, great call. Todd Walker, I would say he's worse, because Todd Walker, he just didn't have range. He was sure-handed. He could turn a double play. He wasn't a butcher by any means. He just didn't have range, you know. But this guy, Stephen Watt, like, I know he's worked hard in the offseason, but even his footwork, even on the plays he made, it just looks a little kind of clumsy and unnatural out there on defense. So I think that they're going to protect him. He's not going to play against lefties. You know, let's hope they get Vaughn Grissom back, you know, at some point during April. And I'm wondering, you know, if this thing becomes a problem with Valdez, Rafaela, you know, you could put him at second base and he would certainly do the job. And in that scenario, you could have Jaron Duran in center, and you could have, you know, Tyler O'Neill left, and you could have Abreu in right. And, you know, I think that might be, you know, that might help you win some games early if Valdez just, you know, if he's not getting the job done. But I agree. But to your other point, Story does change a lot for this team offensively and defensively, having this guy for a full season. We all remember how much they got exposed at shortstop last year with the ill-fated Kike Hernandez experiment early in the season. And then they tried Yu Chang for a little bit. And God, I don't even remember. Maybe I blacked it up, but I don't remember who else they were trying.
It was like Kike to Chang, and then to Kike again. I think Pablo Reyes got a little bit of a
Pablo Reyes, So now they have a legit game changer at shortstop. And this guy, he's a pleasure to watch play shortstop. I have to confess, I didn't watch a lot of Colorado Rockies games, okay? I watch a lot of baseball, but Rockies are not a team that sort of came onto my radar. So I really didn't know how good this guy was on defense. And you saw even last year when he came back, he just makes, you know, I thought he was good at second base in 22. Really a spectacular make for a guy making a position switch. But watching him play shortstop, it's a pleasure. Like, he just makes everything look easy. He's so fluid out there. And he's going to cover a lot of ground. And he's swinging the bat well down here in spring training, too. And he's going to hit third between Devers and Casas. So you would think he's going to get some pitches to hit. So kind of bullish on Trevor Story as a guy that, you know, a lot of people, you know, aren't talking about a whole lot.
Yeah, he's looked like he's really looked like a new man out there. And I mean, it's spring training, so small sample sizes and all that. But I think back to Xander Bogaerts, he wasn't bad defensively. He was like a pretty
average. Yeah, he was sure-handed.
But it's been a while since they've had somebody who makes difficult plays look as routine as he does.
Yeah, I mean, you look back to, like, you know, maybe Stephen Drew, he was really good. Cabrera, he was really good. You know, early day Nomar was really fun to watch at shortstop, really athletic. But yeah, you're right. Xander was the kind of the definition of steady out there. And sometimes that's what you want. You know, there's something to be said for that guy who just makes all the plays. But Story will just be very fun to watch out there playing shortstop every day.
Yeah, I saw him make a play today, ranging over like behind second base.
Yeah, he loves that play. Like, yeah.
Oh man, it's fun. Like you said, it's like fun to watch. Like, it's seeing that, and you're just like, we didn't have that at all last year. Like, there was none of that last year. So
yeah, infield defense was a train wreck last year. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I saw Cutter Crawford's face like light up whenever he saw that. Like, they went to him afterward. Yeah. I think Lou or somebody on the call was like, "Hey, Cutter Crawford appreciates that the most out of everybody out there." But I do want to shift focus to a position group that was heavily addressed this offseason by Craig Breslow. It's the bullpen. There's a ton of bullpen depth now. I know myself and Ed were down in Worcester covering a lot of those games last year. So we did see last year's situation compared to this year. And I feel like just Worcester alone is going to have just much better 40-man depth, and all those guys that got the NRIs, like the Cam Boozers and the Chase Sugarts of the world, that kind of pitched pretty well. But I want to ask you a question. Which way are you leaning? So I know right now they've kind of narrowed it down to, there's a few lefties that are still fighting to see if one of them will latch on. What do you think they're if you had to guess, which way would they lean? Are they going to carry a second lefty, or are they going to go the Criswell and the Winkowski route? Like, what do you think it's going to end up being?
Yeah, I think they're going to end up with two lefties just because of some attrition. And it could be a very short-term thing, like a Zach Kelly. I think he's going to start the season on the IL just because he's behind right now. But here's a guy who he'll be able to come back and help this team, I think. So I think maybe two lefties, at least until Kelly comes back. I don't think he'll miss all that much time. But I think Bernardino earned a chance to be on the team after what he did last year. Joely Rodriguez, to me, has looked pretty good when I've seen him pitch. He still has the propensity to walk a guy here and there. But, you know, you got to remember, this is a guy they were pretty excited about last year, going into the year, and he just kept hit with a ton of different injuries during the season. So if he's healthy, I think he could be a good second lefty. And Alex Cora has had a funny saying this year when, you know, you ask him what he's looking for in the bullpen, and he says, you know, we're looking for righties who can get lefties out and lefties who can get righties out, which is kind of like the opposite of how you used to look at this. But with this three batter rule, that's kind of how you have to look at it. He's like, look, we're going to bring in a lefty, and the other team's going to go to a right-handed pinch hitter a lot of times. So that's some of the things they're looking at right now. I was actually pretty intrigued by Boozer, so I think he'll be fun for fans in Worcester to watch, at least for the start of the season. But, you know, like they should have some bullpen depth this year. I think Criswell, I think that he winds up in AAA. Just, you got to leave somebody stretched out, right? So assuming you go with Whitlock and Hauk for those final two spots in the rotation, I think probably Cooper Criswell is a guy that ends up in the minor leagues to start the year at least.
Something that's interesting with the bullpen and the way that it's really taken form, you've got the two veterans at the top end of it, and then a lot of younger, less proven guys. But with Kenley Jansen, it looks like he's going to be starting the season on the IL. Chris Martin, maybe he dodges that, maybe he's there. But if the two of them aren't starting the season with the team, who gets a safe situation? Are they going to go committee, or is there somebody that
I would say committee right now, with Winkowski kind of taking a lead role in that scenario. I do feel like Martin is in a good place. Talked to him today. You know, I know he got knocked around a little bit in the minors game, but he said the velocity was 95. He even hit 96 on one pitch. And he's like, I've never thrown that hard in spring training on a backfield since I was trying to make teams. So he's just the ageless one, that guy, Chris Martin. Kenley, you know, I think we all make a big deal of, you know, this guy's going to start the season on the IL, but because opening day is such like a red letter day. But it doesn't matter if he misses 4 or 5 days and say he's activated when the team gets to Oakland or Anaheim. And that's just a few days right there. So hopefully he's not gone for too long. But there is some concern about Kenley just because he hasn't done much at all in spring training. He came in with that, you know, we thought he was going to get traded. And then he's got that sore, he had that sore lat muscle. And then he was ready to pitch and he got hit really hard his first game. And then now he's got the lower back. So you hope that's just a minor thing. So that's a little bit of a concern. But I think the bullpen's going to be interesting. They do have, they're really high on some of these guys that Breslow traded for. And this is where they think that Breslow could be a guy who can identify pitching that they can get more out of, you know, with the analytics and all that. And, you know, he identified several people you look at. You know, he identified Isaiah Campbell. He traded, what's his name, Urias to Seattle for him. You know, he got Greg Weissert and the Alex Verdugo trade. This is a guy that, you know, Alex Cora is kind of compared to John Schreiber a little bit.
Kind of looks like him. Kind of feels like him, too. It's not a bad guy to become, too.
No, not exactly. And then Justin Slayton, who, you know, I've been kind of calling Garrett Whitlock 2.0 because we all remember that situation. 3 springs ago. So I think they do have some interesting arms. They do Andrew Bailey. I think that most of the pitchers have raved about the program he has them on, where he just has like, it's kind of a program tailored to each individual pitcher more so than before, where I just think they had a program. Here's our pitching program. Bailey really individualized it to each guy. So you hope that collectively that adds up to a good staff. And a good bullpen. And like I said, I think the bullpen will be decent, at least. I think it'll be pretty good. The thing I worry most about is just the rotation. Can they get enough innings out of the rotation? It was a great sign to see Crawford get into the sixth inning today, go 5 2/3. So he's kind of an underrated secret weapon is Cutter Crawford. He's, you know, they were identifying him at the end of last year as a guy who really has developed his pitch mix and a guy who can really help. So, and if he could be that kind of solid number three guy that they need him to be right now, that would be a big help for this team.
I want to so we talked a little bit about some of the NRIs, some of the guys that got the NRIs. A lot of them got reassigned this past week. But I saw you did do a piece on Cam Boozer, and that's a guy that I got to see up close and personal last year. Fantastic story, by the way.
Yeah, thank you.
And he's also like throwing like 100 miles per hour as well. And he's 31. He's not really a prospect. So
yeah, it's like the rookie. He's like the guy in the rookie, right?
Yeah. It's I think he made a joke last year. I remember I walked in the clubhouse one day and he was I think it was one of the days a lot of the AA guys had gotten up there and he's like, dude, I'm the grandpa in here now. It was like after the Nico Goodrums and Greg Allens all got out of the locker room. But so NRIs, so just speaking about the guys who received NRIs. Who, in your opinion, you can name like two or three or however many you want. Who, in your opinion, has raised their stock the most or put themselves on the team's radar the most out of the NRI group that aren't on the 40-man?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, just not looking at the list right now, but I would say definitely Boozer is the guy who jumps out. Because here's a guy that Alex Cora mentioned kind of just like unprompted, at least twice during interviews. He'd be like, oh, by the way, Boozer was throwing 99 yesterday and fastball and a good cutter and you know, I guess I'm trying to remember who are some of the other guys in that pool. I guess I could just see a look at their roster moves.
I don't think he gave up a run throughout his tenure. Justin Hagenman.
Yeah, Hagenman, that's a guy. He impressed them. There's the other guy Cora keeps mentioning is Benitez, a lefty.
Yeah, the lefty. Yeah.
So they really like him, but yeah, I think some of these guys. I think that's where you know, all these guys have their. They're non-roster guys right now, but they all have options because aside from Lucas Lickey, they all have options because they haven't been in the major leagues before, you know, many of these guys. So I think that that's where I remember what it was like, guys, last year with this whole, you know, starting pitcher by committee, this opener thing. And they were just running through arms like crazy. And they're having to bring a different guy in every day. And we all remember the disaster that was the Kyle Barraclough game.
Poor guy.
Oh, yeah.
And you're just hoping that it's not, you know, a bunch of disposable roster moves this year, and that Alex Cora can have more stability with that bullpen and just have more interchangeable guys. You can opt to the guy here, you can call up a guy here. So you're not just, you know, DFAing guys every 3 days. And Cora had said that's been a problem the entire time he's been the manager here. And he said even in 18 and 19, where, you know, they were thin on guys you could option, have roster flexibility with. And now they have, you know, a lot of guys. There aren't many guys on the pitching staff who don't have options. So this is good. It should make them, you know, more flexible this year as a staff.
All right. I got one more NRI question real quick before you go, Ed. I want to ask you about one guy in specific, and he's a position player. And he's one of my favorite players that I got to cover last year, and that's Nick Sogard. So I want your honest opinion. So I know that he is pretty similar to what Ryan Fitzgerald just was, you know, and obviously we all know the Ryan Fitzgerald story. He was the mayor of Worcester. He never got the chance in Boston to get up on the roster. What are your thoughts on Nick Sogard? Do you think he ever has a shot to land on the MLB roster at any point in 24 or beyond?
I mean, I would say if he does, especially this year, they would have had a lot of injuries. But to be fair, you know, he's one of those guys that spring training is different for us than the regular season, because regular season, we sit there and watch the whole game and then go into the clubhouse after the game. And spring training, they're shuttling guys in and out for us. So we're leaving to go interview guys. So when the guys like Nick Sogard are playing, we usually like down in the clubhouse talking to like Tanner Houck or Tristan Casas or somebody like that. So haven't seen him play a ton. But, yeah, you wonder about guys like that and Nick York and guys who are going to need to fill some infield depth if they have injuries to infield. You know, who are they going to be, some of the guys who step in? And those are a couple of the guys that come to mind. I think York, you know, Cora kind of made a point yesterday about his lack of versatility a little bit. Like, he's basically a second baseman. So how that plays, you wonder if maybe they want to start getting him some exposure to different positions so he could be because, I mean, I think this guy can hit. He didn't have a great spring hitting-wise, but I think this is a guy who's hit most of his life. So that's a guy I'm curious about. But Sogard, just haven't seen enough of him. But, you know, I'd like to hear what you think about him. I mean, you probably
I love Nick Sogard. He's a lot like his cousin.
Yeah.
Yeah, he gave me a quote last year that I've recycled quite a bit, and I know that the, you know, Tyler Murray and the guys in Worcester have said on air a little bit, but it's like his famous quote is like, if you come watch me for a day, you're probably not going to know I'm on the field, but if you come for a month, you're going to know you're going to leave thinking I'm a pretty good player. So, I mean, position versatility is a huge thing. I know Chad Tracy always like talks to us about that it's like, if guys can just play multiple spots, it's only going to help their chances. But then again, it's like, you know, it could be a Ryan Fitzgerald story where it's like, you know, he played every single position but pitcher and catcher. But at the end of the day, it's like it just doesn't work out. So
yeah, it's a matter of opportunity sometimes. And you see some of these guys like Brock Holt was, to be honest with you, he started out like that, right? He was a guy like, was he ever going to get a chance? In 2013, we saw him. We saw him get called up, at times. And nobody really thought anything of him. And then by 2014, he was becoming a major force for this team, and was a guy who was just playing all over the field. And that became his calling card. And I remember the first time they put him in the outfield, there was this ball that he totally, it seemed like he was the left field of Johnny Gomes. I think it was Johnny Gomes. Holt was playing center, actually. Gomes completely lost his ball in the sun. Holt comes running over from center field and snags this ball. And you're like, this guy's never played the outfield before. So, yeah, there's something to be said for having versatility. And I know that Alex Cora really likes that as a manager. Because, you know, Alex was a guy who could pretty much play all over the infield during his career. But, yeah, these guys who could play the infield and play the outfield, they make themselves valuable to a team. And that's why Rafaela, we don't know yet what he's going to become. I think people would like him to be their starting center fielder. But at the very least, you know, he's a guy who can roam around and play center and play short and play second and just very athletic. So just to have a floor like Zidane Rafaela has, you know, is pretty good.
So first of all, I remember that play. I didn't realize that that was Holt's first game in the outfield, though.
Yeah, it was his first game in center. Yeah, I think it was his first game in the outfield. Yeah.
So I've got a question for you about another versatile player, and that's Bobby Dalbec. And I'm gonna keep this simple. Is he making the team, or is it going to be CJ Cron for that bench?
Yeah, that's a really tough call, and one I can't completely answer right now, just because I haven't seen enough of Cron yet. I mean, we all know what his track record is, but, you know, where is he in terms of that back injury he had last year? Where is he in terms of bat speed right now? Because he's not very versatile, okay? No. He does have an opt-out coming. I can't remember what the date is, but I think he has an opt-out coming soon.
I believe it's the 2030. He has 5 days before.
Yeah, so that's going to force the decision right there. And that's when you're going to find out. But Dalbec has done nothing to hurt himself this camp. And he is a guy who can play, you know, to be able to play the both corners. And he's getting more reps in the outfield. And, you know, we know about his power that Dalbec has. But he's also like, it's amazing. He still has options. So you could keep Cron and Dalbec in the organization if you put Cron on the team. And that way, Dalbec's just a phone call away. You can play with that option with him for one more year. I feel kind of bad for Bobby because, you know, some of this has been in his control. Some of this has been out of his control. But it felt like at least last year, he really didn't have a chance. I mean, he was just killing the ball at Worcester. And when he came, you know, the times he came up, I remember times where they would pinch hit for him in the fourth or fifth inning. So it's like we never really got he did play a little bit at the end of last season, but the end of last season, you know, who got hurt? Costas got hurt. The end of last season is just such a blur now.
Yeah. You know, Heimblum, mercifully.
Yeah, I mean, Heimblum got fired, and then you're just like thinking about all this other stuff and not really watching what Bobby Dalbec is doing out there. But yeah, I'm curious to see how that's gonna play out. They still haven't traded this guy. He's been in trade rumors seemingly every offseason the last 2-3 years, and he's still here. And I think he's a guy who can help you off the bench. So I think he'll stay in the organization one way or the other because he does have that option. But
yeah
that Cron Dalbec dilemma. Cron's not helping himself out with his you know, he just plays first base. But I guess, you know, a little bit like Justin Turner last year, right? I mean, Turner could play a little bit of third base too. They didn't put him at second, one, you know, a few times, but he was basically a first baseman DH and a guy they looked at to hit lefties. And Cron, especially with Refsnyder gone early in the year, I think that will open up some. I think that's why Crone's going to make the team, because Refsnyder is really a guy they were counting on to hit against lefties. And now you have CJ Cron, and that might mean, you know, playing Massa in the outfield at times or something when Cron's in the lineup, and you can DH him, because I don't think that Tristan's going to sit a whole lot this year. I just think that he's going to be a linchpin of that lineup this year, totally different than last year, where you remember Turner was basically playing first against every lefty the first few months of the season, really until he hurt that foot in Seattle at the trade deadline. Turner was playing first base against most lefties, and now I think Tristan is proving he's an everyday player. And well, let's see how he hits against lefties this year.
Yeah. It seems like there's also, and I don't think that this affects the decision to bring in Cron, but you've got a bunch of spots on the 40-man that are going to be open one way or the other just from Giolito being off. I don't think he's been put on the 60-day yet. I don't think Hendricks has been put on.
No, he hasn't. Yeah. I was thinking about that too the other day.
Yeah. Like, so that's why there's always that thought in the back of my mind.
Chris Murphy's the third guy who's going to go on there.
Yeah, with Murphy down potentially for that. And Brian Mata, like, we don't know what's going on with him.
That's another thing. I came into camp like, you know, let's see what Mata can do. He's out of options, and then he gets hurt right away. So
immediately.
that seems to be the story with him. So I'm just not seeing it with Brian Mata. I mean, I think they'll stash him on the IL until he gets healthy, and then you have to make a decision. Is this a guy who can impact our team? And I just really, since Alex Cora gave us that initial update that, you know, that he was injured, we've heard like next to nothing about this guy. I think he finally threw a bullpen session or something, you know, a couple days ago. But yeah, really, really been quiet on the Brian Mata front.
Yeah, so that's like four potential 60, three or four for the.
So they have maneuverability. Yeah, and I still hope that one day I walk in and they signed a starting pitcher, you know. but still don't know if that's going to happen. But you just think the longer these guys are out there, someone's price is going to drop. You know, even if it's like a Clevinger, right? That gives you some depth. This guy can eat innings. Lorenzen, what's his mark going to be? It just seems like, you know, Montgomery's going to be out of their price range. But until he signs, he's out there. So, you know, this is kind of – has added another dimension to this offseason here, or this spring training for the Sox.
I'm gonna change switch topics here. So something that I saw, you posted some video of some of the prospects actually taking BP, and so I want to talk about the spring breakout game.
Loved it. I loved it.
Oh, I mean, it was an incredible thing. I think I saw even our friend Brendan Campbell on Twitter/X even say, like, I would originally when it got announced, I thought it was going to be like a tournament where it was just like, okay, like, you know, you play one team and then you win, you get to play again, or it's just one seven inning game, whatever. I mean, it's still enjoyable. But what were your thoughts, I guess, on getting to see like almost every top prospect in the Red Sox system play on the same field together?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed watching Kyle Teal hit. Because you see a guy who in his first at bat, he rips one down the line, the left field line. And then a second at bat, he hits one down the right field line. I mean, the Red Sox haven't had a defensive catcher who can hit. You got to say since Jason Varitek, right?
Vasquez had the 1 year where he hit like 20 homers or something, but it's been
Right. Vasquez did. Yeah. He was a threat at time. I think it was 2019. They just haven't had that guy who projects as like the catcher of the future. I remember when we were trying to, you know, is Blake Swihart the catcher of the future? You know, just like,
oh yeah,
he was not, to be a spoiler alert. But yeah, so Teal is a guy really excited to watch. Roman Anthony, man, he's just like, he didn't have any hits in the spring breakout game, but just really impressed. Just, you ever see a guy who just looks like a baseball player out of Central Casting? Just looks like he was born to play baseball. This guy's 19 years old, you know, carries himself like he's 23, 24. And guys like that always jump out at you. These guys who, you know, they just have a maturity about them and a security about them. Like, hey, I belong on this baseball field. And Marcelo Meyer is like that also. You know, he obviously just needs to stay healthy. But I think these guys, what's clear to me about these guys is they already have a very good bond, and they're kind of like, we're the next wave of Red Sox. And none of them got the deer in the headlights look when Craig Breslow kind of put them on the spot this offseason and said, you know, we're you know, our future, how good we are, is going to largely depend on how quickly Teal and Meyer and Roman Anthony kind of develop here. You know, they embraced that challenge. So it's going to, you know, you wish they had a little more pitching in the system, but I think they're working on that. But yeah, the breakout game, they take a lot of pride in being Red Sox prospects. You get that feel that we're, you know, we're the next wave. And, you know, we saw that with the Betts and the Bogarts and, you know, the Benintendis and the Devers and that whole era right there. And not to say that any, you know, that's a lot of pressure to put on these guys to say, are any of these guys going to be those guys? But they might be. So I think it's a very exciting time for the farm system. I could feel the energy of those guys that day playing in that game.
Are there any prospects that you see, not necessarily in the breakout game, it could just be just on the backfields in getting in as like a sub in one of the games. Have there been any prospects that have really impressed you that you hadn't heard about prior to this spring training?
Not really that I haven't heard about, but Miguel Blyce is a guy that I think he was a guy a lot of people are talking about. And then you forget about a guy when he gets hurt, but this guy, you just look at him and he's, you know, he's just a physical specimen out there. So this guy, he could become a big part of this team. Still haven't seen a lot of guys like Mikey Romero and some of the other, because he had the back thing last year. But I think they have a lot of position players in that farm system. And at some point that they're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to leverage some of these guys, maybe put one or two of them in a deal at some point. You hope it's done in the big three, because we all want to see these guys. Also, Gonzalez, Winkelmann Gonzalez impressed me in the breakout game. He did walk three, but he's got good stuff, man. And we made a lot of strides in this. He got off to a tough start last year and just made a ton of strides. So I would assume that he's going to, if he doesn't start the year at AAA, I would assume he's going to spend a lot of the year at AAA. So really, he's a guy that I really have my eyes on this year, because, you know, like we said, they really need pitching prospects. So I think maybe, is he kind of at where Bello was at starting 22, where Bello, if you remember, really started to come on in that 22 season in the minors, after he was kind of almost, somebody we really didn't hear a whole lot about. So that's what I'm wondering if Gonzalez could be that guy who really sort of takes that kind of quantum leap this year.
All right, Ed, I have a speed run of questions if you're ready for it.
Let's go.
I think Ed might be frozen.
Oh, Ed is frozen in time, it looks like.
Have you gotten to see Yoldan Cespedes at all?
Oh, there you go. I haven't, and I really want to. Yeah, you were frozen for a bit there. And then
you were frozen. You were frozen. I was like,
then all of a sudden, your Yoldan Cespedes question game, but I haven't. I wish it's one of those things you wish you could be more places at once during these spring training things. Because like you're watching like the major league game, and my job is to watch. But they have all these guys on the backfields you'd like to see too. But I would like to see Cespedes, especially those numbers he put up last year after they drafted him. You know, that's a pretty good hit tool he's got right there. So haven't had a chance to see much of him this spring, but I'd like to. That's another guy pretty excited about this team. Like I said, you know, you can say what you want about the present. The future is looking pretty bright for this team. I think you'd have to say.
All right, Ed, do we got you now? All right, you're not frozen.
I think so. I hope so.
Okay. Ed, I hope so.
All right. I'm going to do a speed run right now, unless you got anything else before I do it.
I've got one more question, and it's pretty straightforward. Yes or no, does Seydon Rafaela make the opening day roster?
Yes, I think that the Ref Snyder thing kind of, so as I put it, it's almost hard for him not to make the team now. Just looking at the players, the number of players, and you know, they kind of need him right now, whether it's whether he's playing center field every day or kind of bouncing from center to short to second. I think he's earned a spot on this team. He's looked good offensively when he's been out there. Could it be a Jackie Bradley Jr. situation from 2013, where Jackie Bradley Jr. in 2013 was the greatest player I ever saw at spring training? I mean, I think I wrote about him for six straight days. And he wound up making the team because Ortiz actually started the season on the IL with the Achilles thing lingering from the year before. So I think in the same way, Ref Snyder has kind of opened the door. Ref Snyder and Grissom have opened the door for Rafaela to be on this team opening day, one way or the other. But yeah, so I really think he's going to be on the team.
All right, Ian, I have some. It's a speed run of questions. They're not really baseball related, and some of them are food related. So you might you're going to be getting hungry. I know you are, because you said you're doing this before dinner. So same with me. So, but here we go. Man. If you're ready for this. First question here. I want to know your favorite city to travel to during the MLB season.
You know what's great is that we're going there right away. Seattle. I love Seattle. Great city to walk around in. Great restaurants, great food, and just kind of a beautiful place. High hills, and I've always liked Seattle. So get to start there this year.
Where about did you grow up?
I actually grew up in South Shore, Boston, South Shore town called Cohasset, where Mike Monaco is from too. So who would have thought the two Red Sox people would kind of both be from this tiny little town on the shore of Cohasset. So yeah, that's where I grew up, and I went to Northeastern for college.
Okay. We're going on the trend of random here. I need your favorite movie of all time.
Ooh, God, my kids would probably tell you that I love all the Rocky, almost all the Rocky movies, except we joke that Rocky V doesn't exist. I love mid-80s movies, Top Gun, Beverly Hills Cop, Fletch, big Eddie Murphy guy, all those Eddie Murphy movies in the mid-80s, 48 Hours, Trading Places. And I train my kids who are all adults now. They're all in college and stuff. But, we just watch these movies from the 80s and we just, laugh our heads off. We watch them a few times a year. So, yeah, I'm a sucker for mid-80s movies, mostly comedies, but also even some rom-coms like When Harry Met Sally. That's a go-to movie. Or if you want to get to the early 90s, A Few Good Men, that's a movie I've seen 500 times. So I'm a guy who likes like a handful of movies, and I'll just watch them over and over and over again.
Now, did you see the Top Gun 2?
Yeah, that was great. Saw that with my wife and a couple of my kids. And yeah, that was really well done. And I'm hoping that Beverly Hills Cop 4, I guess, is coming out. It's going to be called Axel Foley. And that's coming out this summer, only on Netflix, I believe. But that's something, I mean, Eddie Murphy, aside from Larry Bird, Eddie Murphy was my guy in the mid-80s. So, and he still is in some way. So I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, man, you just the next question, actually, I might put a little tweak in this question then. I did get to stand next to you while we were watching a Celtics game.
Yeah, the Celtics Nuggets game, yeah.
I know you're a huge Celtics guy. So my next question here, I want your favorite athlete outside of baseball, and it can't be Larry Bird.
Oh, it can't be Larry Bird. Boy, that's tough. Anybody who played for the 86 Celtics from Kevin McHale to Robert Parrish to Dennis Johnson to Danny Ainge, even to Bill Walton. Absolutely loved that team growing up. But yeah, I mean, Bird is honestly like – he's the guy. Like, I put him like at such a higher level than anyone else. He was just so captivating to watch, and just like you could feel his kind of heartbeat while he was out there. He was just such a grinder, you know. And I think that I always saw Dustin Pedroia that he reminded me a lot of Bird. Just with this, it was all with Bird. It was all basketball. He didn't care about anything else, and that was the way Pedroia was. But obviously Tom Brady too. Like, I'm a Patriots guy too, and just watching what he did, he probably gave me more as a fan, because I don't cover football, than any athlete since Bird, non-baseball related, was Brady. Obviously that's he's a cyborg, just he'd do anything to win.
You've been around a lot of baseball players in your time over the long career you've had covering teams. And I asked this question the other day to a player that we had on the show, but I want to know, what is the weirdest thing you've ever seen a player have to autograph?
This is an easy one. Okay. I'm in Japan in 2006. We're on the Japanese. It was a Japanese All-Star tour that MLB.com was nice enough to send me on to cover. It ended up that no Red Sox players were on the team, by the way. I remember Bronson Arroyo was there, Mike Myers, and some former Red Sox players. But I'm at this bar one night, and a bunch of the players are there. And Ryan Howard signed a certain part of a female anatomy that we'll just say she has two of this particular part, and he signed that with a with a, like a Sharpie, and that was definitely the craziest thing that I've ever seen. Hopefully I'm not talking out of school and I'll get Ryan Howard involved in a big controversy here, but that was definitely the most crazy signing thing that I ever saw. And thank you, because I've never gotten the chance to tell that story publicly before. I've told it privately, but you just gave me the perfect platform to tell that one.
Hey, we are a very pro Ryan Howard podcast here. He's a St. Louis guy. Yeah. I grew up in St. Louis, so Yeah, no, that's incredible. That's good. I don't remember what Cody Funderburk told us. I forgot what he said, but it wasn't anything. I think he said
it was just like that one's forehead. Yeah,
This one's better, right? This
one's that one beats it, especially the setting. Yeah, Japan, like, yeah. All right, I'm about to get you a little hungry here before we let you go, but I need. Are you a foodie? Before I ask you a couple of these.
I'm not like, I do like good food. My mom is a really good cook. My wife is a really good cook, but I wouldn't call myself like a foodie. I'm not like, oh, I can't eat. Like, I'll also just eat like a burger or eat like a taco. You know, I'm not, so I'm a little bit of everything when it comes to food.
Okay. So if you were going to order a pizza, what topping would you put on it?
You know, I'm pretty simple with pizza. I would say just like sausage or mushroom, maybe some onions. But yeah, nothing like, I'm not going to get pineapples on my pizza or anything like that. The only thing, there's only one thing I hate on pizza, and that's the anchovies. And, when I was a kid, we would order like a pizza for the family, and, my mom and stepdad, they'd always get half anchovies. And if that anchovy even slid onto one of your, it was just like, it ruined the whole taste of the thing. So, yeah, pizza, anything but anchovies. But yeah, I love pizza.
What is a guilty pleasure snack?
Guilty pleasure snack. Oh, God. I love, like, candy, like Mike and Ike's, Dots, like fruit candies like that. Hershey bar with almonds. Girl Scout cookie. Thin Mint Girl Scout cookie.
Oh, those. Do you freeze Thin Mints?
Put them in the freezer. Yeah. Yep. All-time favorite. Yeah.
It's that time of the year, you guys. They're hitting us up outside of grocery stores right now. And like, oh my goodness, I got a wedding to get ready for.
Yeah, I went through a couple boxes this spring already.
Oh, I got a wedding to get ready for. I can't be going through these, but I have an important one for you. We've asked everybody to come on the show. I don't know how big you were. I don't know if you remember years ago when all the fast food places did like the fried chicken sandwich battle or any of that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I have a important question. So if you were going to say you were going to go get dinner after the show, right, down in Fort Myers, and you wanted to go get a fried chicken sandwich or fried chicken strips, whatever, and all of the fast food restaurants were available, where would you go?
I'm a Chick-fil-A guy. I love their chicken. They're just the regular plain fried chicken sandwich and the waffle fries. I get it. Matter of fact, like I have a Chick-fil-A like that's like 5 to 10 minutes from my house. We live in West Roxbury, and I never go there. It's always been like a Fort Myers thing for me because the first time I ever heard of Chick-fil-A was down here. So I get it at least once every spring. I haven't had it this year. I'm already thinking I'm getting it. There's a night game on Thursday. So I'm already thinking that's my lunch that day. I'm going to get my usual, which is the Chick-fil-A sandwich, waffle fries, and a Diet Dr. Pepper. So, yeah, you got me. Definitely Chick-fil-A when it comes to the fried chicken sandwich.
I agree with you. Parker does not.
What do you like, Parker?
Can I give you a rebuttal? And sure. Have you ever tried Zaxby's down in Fort Myers?
I haven't. I've heard some guys talk about that. I think
is it Parker?
I think it was Stevie Eats, the the Nesson camera guy. You might have seen him on Twitter. Steve DeSilva, a great guy. I think he's a fried chicken guy, and he mentioned that. I think Jemai Webster's mentioned that to me once or twice, but I never have tried it, but I probably should.
You got to try
fried chicken. You asked me about guilty pleasure. Fried chicken is probably my all-time guilty pleasure. And not just like fried chicken sandwich, just like regular fried chicken. Love, Popeyes or whatever. I love a good fried chicken. I try not to eat it too much. I'm 52 years old now. You can't be eating a bunch of fried chicken at my age. But, once or twice a year, man, it goes down good.
Yeah. No, and there's a couple Zaxby's there in Fort Myers. Also, John Schreiber turned us on to PDQ as well. That's pretty
good. Yeah, I've seen that around. Yeah, I haven't been there.
John Schreiber said that was his favorite. But
yeah.
All right, well, that was my speed run. I'm also hungry. Ed, do you have anything to finish this off?
Yeah, just thanks so much for coming on, Ian. Like, you're the best. Like, we're really happy you're on today.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. It was a lot of fun. You guys did a great job. You know, I've been on quite a few of these things, different podcasts, and this one was a lot of fun because, you know, I'm looking at the thing right now. We've been on for, you know, almost 50 minutes here, and it's flown by, and that's the sign of a good podcast. You guys really know the team, and not just like the obvious things about the team, but, you know, the deep depth parts of the team and the organization. So this was a lot of fun for me too.
Well, Ian, we appreciate it. I'm shout out to Rob Bradford as well for bringing you over to our little corner.
Yeah, Bradford's my guy. Vegas. Bradford's my guy, man.
Yeah, so we appreciate you hopping on, and we'll definitely be chatting with you in the future as well.
Yeah, anytime, guys. That was fun.